Welcome to Sent 315. We're here to encourage and equip Christians to engage in the adventure of sharing Jesus with those that God puts into their life. And we're so glad you're here.
And we're back.
Matthew, I got a great idea. Why don't we put two besties in the room and just listen to them?
That sounds interesting.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Look Brianna how fast Wills. That happened. Two besties in the room.
Okay.
Four besties in the room.
So what do we got?
What's going on? Unfiltered. I'm very excited. We're here with my sister and friend, Bree Burrier.
Hello.
Hi. I'm so glad you're here.
Brianna, I've got to tell you, I'm so happy because I thought she was a myth.
A myth?
Yeah, because everybody talks about her all the time. I'm going, wait a minute, I don't even know her.
Oh, I hype her up. I hype her up to all my friends, and then when they meet her, they hype her up to all their friends, and it holds true. The hype holds true, and I'm so excited.
And it's like human viral.
Yeah, it really is. The hype train is real.
And Tobias ran off, and he's doing the Unyielding podcast to try to catch up with her. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. But he's unyielding.
Yes, he is.
She's gonna grace this room. It's gonna, whatever they talk about is exiting right now, and she's gonna
Exodus.
I remember when I first, guns. Yeah. I remember when I first, I think I've told you before, when I first met you, I was at home group. When I first remember meeting you, I was at home group, like knowing you. And I saw you, and they would always ask you to pray a lot. Like Mike, because Mike does this thing at the end of home group. He just like looks at people and he's like, hey, can you pray? And then like the person will pray. And I feel like he always asked you so much. And I would like, you would pray and it would be so like, God, I just thank you, Lord. Just like so passionate. And I like looked up and it was like, my eyes were like, who is this person? And I remember I went to Alyssa, I think. And I said, I have to be friends with Bree Burrier. I have to. You're wearing a cool hat. Yeah. Your hair was so cool. I think you were holding one of your babies and you were just like going hand prayer. And I was like, I need to be like her. I need to be her friend.
I grew up in a very charismatic church, you guys.
Yes. Okay. And now here we are.
I couldn't bring friends from school.
But
that's
I love
why.
That. Yeah. And I feel like I've learned so much from you. So I'm excited for people
we love it.
To hear about your story and your testimony. So I think that's where we should start. Just tell us to your testimony and how you came to the Lord and what that looked like for you as a child.
Yeah. I'm Bree Burrier, everybody. I always say that my testimony is generational, that it doesn't start with me, that it starts with my mom. I grew up knowing Jesus. Reba McEntire, Michael Jackson. These are the names that I have known my whole life. My mom grew up in the hood, but she was like a closeted country music fan. So
same.
She loved her some Reba, Dolly Parton. But she had a pretty crazy life. She was one of 13 children, very much in poverty in Los Angeles. My grandfather was a known alcoholic in their neighborhood. Didn't work, or maybe would work odd jobs for a little bit, but to the point where asking people to buy him alcohol outside of liquor stores, but their community was so small, so... Mm-hmm. My mom would get made fun of at school about her dad. Mm-hmm. And then my grandmother was a paranoid schizophrenic. And she was not always having episodes. But when my mom was four, her brother, who was 2 years older than her, was hit by a car in front of the whole family. A new driving neighbor, a 16-year-old boy, hit him when he was going to get a ball in the street. It was really, really devastating. He was like in a coma for like 3 weeks. It was just a really devastating death. And that sparked my grandmother's episodes so much. She was a very scary person to live with, my mom said. So right before the state came and took all the kids, my mom's 7 years old, sitting on the doorstep, like sitting in front of her house. And my grandmother is having an episode where she's hitting, like taking a baseball bat and just destroying the house, just breaking all the windows because the house was evil.
Wow.
And my mom said she heard this voice in her heart, but she felt was God telling her, hold on, life will not always be this way. I have something better for you. So that was a seed of God for her. And she would go on to foster care. And sometimes the foster people were nice and sometimes they were abusive. And it was always, she didn't know what she was going to get. For some reason, it was always changing because I think they would try to keep some of the siblings together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty crazy. My mom went to one of her foster mothers, would be one of those people who went to the Jim Jones cult in Africa.
Oh my gosh.
So my mom went to that church as a little kid.
Jeez.
They told her she had cancer and then they put her in a closet and prayed for her and said she was healed of cancer. Like, it was really, really crazy. Wow. My mom has such a wild life, you guys. That's why she's a wild woman. She loves Jesus, but she's a wild woman.
She's on next week.
You guys are not ready you're not ready for Crystal.
Okay, please, she can go on Mike's podcast.
Unyielding might be more her speed. Yeah, my mom had a crazy life. But when she was 15, my oldest aunt was able to get custody of her. I think they're like 10 or 12 years apart. And so my mom would get pregnant with my sister and give birth to my older sister at 17. Then when she had my baby sister, my aunt's husband was diagnosed with a really fast-moving cancer, and my mom was his end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, her only father figure in her life. And so just a lot of devastation. But that aunt found the Lord while her husband had cancer. And that aunt, we call her the Holy Spirit in our family, because when any of the teenagers, not me, I was a good teenager, but my cousins, there's 13 siblings, so there's a bunch of cousins, she would just know when somebody was doing dirt. She would call people when there were places they weren't supposed to be at 2 a.m. and my cousins would be like, I don't know how she knows. And I'd be like, because she's the Holy Spirit, y'all. You need to stop doing wrong. Yeah. She's going to find out. Nothing gets past Brenda. So that aunt found the Lord in a really real way. My mom is living with her, but not really committing her life to the Lord. Then she meets my dad. My dad's like this young, hot athlete. He's going into the NFL. They get pregnant with me. And the pregnancy is just difficult. It's touch and go. Am I she going to miscarry me? It was just a really hard pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then she went into labor with me at like just at 7 months. And so the delivery was really scary. She lost a lot of blood. She's thinking either she's going to pass away or I'm going to pass away. My aunt, Brenda, comes to the hospital with all of her like charismatic black church members. And they are just praying in the waiting room, just like calling down the fire of heaven. And my mom says she makes this bargain with God. Like, if you keep my baby, if you let me keep this baby, I will devote my life to you. I end up being fine. I'm only in the NICU for a week. And my mom keeps that promise. She really instilled a truth, like the truth of relationship with Christ in me from the time that I was younger. And I have three other sisters and we all were raised in the church, but she was very intentional about discipling me. Mm-hmm. And so I just always grew up feeling like there was a big purpose on my life as a little kid. So that made me feel like I can't lie. I did other things. Like I was the queen of talking back. But my parents would always say if they wanted to know what was going on, they would just take me in a room and I'd be like, I did it. So did Danielle. So did Christina. Like, yeah. I just gave up everybody. My mom tells this story of me just cutting the ponytail off of my sister's hair. And my mom being like, what happened to Christina's hair? And I just come into the room with scissors. Like, it was me.
Oh, God.
Sobbing. I just couldn't tell. But I felt like, well, I have this purpose on my life. So I can't lie. I can't do this. I can't do that. I was a really good teenager up into my senior year of high school. We grew up in Rancho San Diego, and I always say people don't leave Rancho San Diego. So I had the same friends from kindergarten all through high school. That group of girls just went wild when we got into high school. We were cheerleaders. I don't know. We were just wild. And so, not me. They were all wild. And the moms always, when they see my mom at the grocery store or whatever, they always reminisce about this story that one night we were having a sleepover, and all the girls snuck out and met senior boys when we were sophomores. And I didn't go. And my one friend, Alicia's mom, is always like, why didn't she go? Like, what was different about her? And my mom was like, Jesus, and we beat them. Okay, we spanked them. So she knew that she couldn't do that. And that was just me for most of my life. But something happened my senior year of high school. I just felt like, I don't want to be good anymore. I've missed out on everything. You know what actually happened, you guys? this teenager reality TV show Laguna Beach came out, and I was obsessed with it.
I love Laguna Beach.
I was obsessed with it.
I remember that
show. And these teenagers had no supervision. They're like going to Mexico without their parents, and I just, you know what? Watch what your kids are watching, because it planted a seed in me. I never had a desire to do any of that stuff. When my friends were doing wild things, I'm like, well, you're messing up your liver. You're like, I just, before watching the show, I had no desire to be a partier. After watching it, it changed my life. And my senior year of high school, I decided to start partying with that group of girls. And the Lord kept me safe in so many ways and preserved things in so many ways. But I was just like a partier from that senior year of high school. Then I went to Cal State Fullerton. I graduated high school young. So I was 17, living in an apartment with my childhood best friend from that group of girls. And we just partied and failed our classes and just wasted our parents' money until one Friday I got alcohol poisoning in a intense, I thought I was going to die. Like, I couldn't keep anything down. I'd thrown up so much that I'd burst a blood vessel in my eye. I had bursted blood vessels in my face. Okay, I'm brown, you guys, and my skin, like, it was clear. I just had purple all over my face.
Gosh.
I had burst blood vessels in my face, in my eye, but I was terrified of my parents knowing, and so I told my roommate, don't take me to the hospital. Take me to the student-ran clinic on campus. And that's why you shouldn't let 17-year-olds go to college. She also graduated young. We were both 17. And the guy who worked at the clinic was a student, and he just kept giving me Gatorade. Like, it's going to be okay. We just have to keep you hydrated.
My miracle drug,
Gatorade. I went home the following weekend, and I just felt so low. I was depressed. I felt like I really prided myself on not being a liar. I was lying to my parents. Mm. They had no idea that I was failing. They had no idea that from Thursday to Sunday, I was drunk. Like, they knew nothing that was really going on in my life. They didn't know who I was dating. Everything was a secret. And I remember sitting at my little church that I grew up in around the corner from here. It used to be New Life Church, Pentecostal Church of God, but now it's Shadow Mountains Middle Eastern Church.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up there, and my childhood pastor he was the youth pastor and now become the senior pastor, and he had started this series called Imagine. And it was all about, imagine what God could do if every single person in this church fully committed themselves to Christ. And I just remember being in the stands crying, not even about what he was saying, it was the passion in which he was speaking and that he really believed it. And I knew this family. I'd grown up with this family. He had so much joy. The whole family had a purpose. Like, they're a little family church. The whole family is involved. The kids are leading worship. His brother is the assistant pastor. And they just had so much passion and joy and deep community. And I just realized I had none of that. But I had it at one point in my life. My youth group was everything when I was a younger teenager. I was super involved. And so in that weekend, I decided not to go back to Cal State Fullerton. I moved back home to San Diego, and I prepared to go to the Dream Center Leadership School in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Dream Center. And what that was, it was a training ground for ministry. So some people, like, similar to YWAM, but it all happens at the Dream Center. You're a domestic missionary. So you're going out and ministering to homeless people like they do. You're on campus. They have a transitional living center, and you're helping watch those people's children while they go and get their GEDs and all of this different stuff. You're doing ministry all the time while also learning the Bible and doing some Bible classes. And I would do that program for 2 years. And then I worked for the church, for the Dream Center, for their youth group for a year. Mm-hmm. So I lived there for 3 years. And then when I moved back home, I knew I really wanted to live in San Diego. So I moved back home, and I met Tobias 2 months later at Foothills. I came back and worked for the church I grew up at. Foothills was putting on a conference. Mike was putting on a conference when he was youth junior high pastor, and it was to help train other churches to have a thriving youth ministry like you guys. And so I was there because I was working for the youth ministry at the church I grew up at. Tobias, of course, came in an hour late, and there was a seat next to me, and the rest was history, you guys. I love at first sight. for him.
I love that. So you are at the conference, you meet Tobias. Obviously, we know now you guys are married. Spoiler alert, whoever's listening, they're married. They got kids.
We're married. I got all his kids.
And I know I was talking to you last night, and we were talking about you get married, you have kids, and then you and your family all go back to the Dream Center. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about going back there with your family and what that was like, taking, you know, your family of four at the time, putting them back in the Dream Center, being in like one little bedroom and doing ministry with your family, with your two little kids.
Wow. Yeah.
It was so awesome. It's one of our favorite seasons. So when Tobias and I got married, we had this agreement that we would never live just a conventional life. We were not going to be the people who were slaves to Little League. We were mm-hmm. not going to be the people who were at a field six times a week and maybe popped into church for every other week. Or we just knew we wanted our lives to be more fully just committed to Christ in a tangible way where our kids saw it. Mm. We didn't want to outsource discipling our kids to Sunday school. We wanted them to see living and thriving relationship with Christ and what that looked like. And so we were married for 4 years and we had Solomon and Finley only. And so they were 2 and 1. And I still have great friends who work at the Dream Center. The Dream Center is always struggling financially, struggling to pay staff. And so they were understaffed. And my friend reached out to me about working for the ministry school that I went to, that they needed. How they set it up is older women are discipling younger women. They didn't have a woman to disciple their second year girl students. Mm-hmm. And so they asked if I would do it. And they're like, but we can't pay you. Like, okay. Well, we'll just live on campus for free and rent our house out. And so that will serve, because my husband works remote, so he could move to LA to work. And so we moved back to the Dream Center. Well, I moved back. They moved there for the first time. It is a hospital that has been turned into a bunch of dorms. So we lived in a dorm. We lived on a floor, and the whole staff everyone is in their 20s and unmarried for the most part, unless you're a director. So we lived in a dorm. We didn't have a shower in our dorm. We had a communal bathroom. We'd take our little naked babies to the shower every day and shower them off. It was so fun, though. I love communal living. Our neighbor was like a 22-year-old girl next door to us, had to deal with me weaning Finley during that time. We got her a basket after the weaning 2 weeks was over. We got her all these gifts. We're sorry. We know this is not what you signed up for.
Yeah.
But so I was there. I helped disciple the second-year girls in the ministry school. And then also I did chapels for the women in recovery. So they have a recovery program. And people live there. People give up everything. Sometimes they're court ordered to be there. Mm. And they just need a lot of encouragement. They've been through so much. And their lives, it's the lowest point in their lives a lot of times. And so I was one of the chapel speakers for the women's program.
They do such great work. Jeremy, my son, who we almost lost, you were describing, I'll give you my son if, mm-hmm. if you let me have him. So Jeremy and I just got back from Dream City in Phoenix, I saw their 2024 annual report, and if I remember correctly, 44,000 salvations last year.
Oh my gosh.
That's the kind of work that this organization is involved in. Nicely done.
It's amazing. It's still we tithe to Foothills and we tithe to the Dream Center. We love the Dream Center, and it was just a great time in our life. Tobias ended up discipling some of the boys or young men in the leadership school. And then we just got to also minister to the people in the recovery program, because a lot of them have kids that they haven't seen in forever, or kids who are in the system, and they would love seeing our kids. Mm. And so, and it's gonna make me cry. It was just very sweet being able to do kingdom work in that kind of all day, every day, wake up. It's a little village unto itself. And then all of the restaurants and the grocery stores are within walking distance. And so we would go and get dinner and then go get dessert and let our kids play on the patio of a restaurant. And it would all the Dream Center people would come by and play with our kids and talk to our kids. And
that's so fun.
It was really, really fun. I loved it.
Talk about generational. Yeah. You know, you go back and now you're planting that forward. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like, when you tell the story, because the one thing that's in my mind is you're fairly newly married. I mean, like 4 years maybe. And you have these two kids. And there's this decision to honor the Lord and to, you have a house. You have a house here in San Diego. There's this decision to honor the Lord and uproot your family from your home here and move them into a hospital room to do ministry.
Without a shower,
you guys. With your two little kids and your husband. And I know you said earlier that you really felt like there was, like, you wanted to be a family that, like, honored the Lord mm-hmm. and did that. But I'm also assuming that there were probably times in those months or however long you were there where you were probably like, did I make the right decision in this moment? Like, should I have moved my family here? Like, what, we're doing ministry. I have two kids. Like, we're in this room. And I'm wondering, like, in those moments, what was that process going through that and being like, but I'm going to stay.
I'll bet you she never asked that question. Guys, Tobias might have, but.
No, neither. It's so funny. Neither one of us, not a single time, felt like we regretted. We were both weird. Tobias is an identical twin and we do everything with his brother. Like, he would want us to all live in the same house if we could.
That's true.
So
that's
we're
true.
Both very communal living oriented. Yeah. And so it was the, up until that point in our marriage, the happiest time of our life.
Wow.
We had a come down when we moved back. Like, when we moved back, there was this sadness about going back to just the normalcy of living in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. But the time, the 18 months we were there, the happiest time that point of our lives. We loved it. My son was like a little delayed with his speech, but he would tell us very clearly, because I did ministry with them all day long. I was discipling people in the recovery program, people in the ministry school. And so we'd get a knock at our little dorm door. I was making coffee for the next person to come. And my son would go, no, mama, no more humans. I'm done with humans.
How about
so
a puppy?
Solomon was like done with it. But Tobias and I loved it so much. We never regretted it. And we've honestly been trying to recreate that experience in different ways. We have our property now and we are trying to dream up, what can we do? Like, how can this 12 acres be unto the Lord? What kind of ministry can we do? It was really the greatest time in our life.
And it just goes to show you, when you truly are walking in your calling, bodaciously mm-hmm. crazy like that one, or whatever different flavor it is, when you're walking in your calling, it's like life. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's Zoe, you know, abundant life, you know, and that's what it sounds like when you're sharing that.
That is what it felt like. Like, I probably had to grow in just the mundane, like mm-hmm. finding joy in normalcy. But something like that, doing this unconventional ministry thing with my family, that is something that I live for.
But what a great phase. And I don't want to, I just want you to keep talking, but now you're in this different thing. And how do you balance that? How do you balance ministry and your family and all of that where you're at right now? I might be jumping ahead too far, but I'm excited to hear about it.
No, that's what I was thinking in my head, is like, now here we are. And I always tell you, one of the things that I love about you, like, I love watching your life. I tell you that because I really feel like there is a very sweet balance of you're very, very interpersonal. Like, you are very relational and you have people in your life that you hang out with. You have people that come over, just like hang out with you and your kids. And, you know, they're running around and playing cats and watching Moana or whatever and like things like that. And you're like, come into my life because I still want to love you. I still want to go out and have dinner. I still want to like get together with you. But you're also a full-time stay-at-home, now homeschooling mom. And so I am interested in like the balance of that and like what that is like and the like still loving people and sharing your faith and having those relationships while also having this full-time homemaker.
Well, I've always known that God has called me to minister to women who are younger than me, mm-hmm. or in maybe not younger age-wise, but in a season that I've come out of. And so I've always committed my heart to, okay, if I am newly married, I'm going to be discipling a girl who wants to be married. Or if I'm married now 12 years, I'm going to be discipling a girl who's been married for 5 years. And so I've always kept that throughout marriage, throughout having kids. And that's where we're at right now. So I'm homeschooling the two older kids who are 10 and 8. And in that, there's so much freedom in our schedule that we have people coming over all the time, newly married, newly pregnant. My very best friend in the world is Jesse George, Chris and Debbie's daughter-in-law. And I'm going to be there when she gives birth to her first baby. I'm her birth partner. So she's at our house like every other day. And just getting to encourage her about being a new mom. There's a lot of younger girls who are pregnant who come to our house and want to ask about being a mom and being a wife. So I've kept that part of my life I'll never get rid of that part of my life. I always say I want to be 80 years old, still being invited to a ton of weddings and births, and I want to be surrounded by babies and weddings forever. And so that is important to me. But with Solomon and Finley being 10 and 8 years old, I've discovered with parenting that the keeping the kid alive, just fed, clothed, bathed, is actually the easy part. Now we are forming character. And so the two people I'm discipling most in my life are Solomon and Finley. Mm-hmm. My ministry is them. It's so much of them. And a lot of homeschool is taken from my time in ministry school. I met some of the most amazing people and had some of the deepest connections because every morning we woke up and worshiped together. Every morning we studied the word together. And that's what I do with my kids on top of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And if it was only reading, writing, and arithmetic, I couldn't do homeschool. Like, I, gun to my head, cannot spell the word restaurant. Like, but I can disciple them. Same. I can teach them to love Jesus. And so that's what really makes me feel passionate right now, teaching them to walk with the Lord on their own. We have time in worship, and I'll ask them, like, what do you, like, did the Lord speak anything to you? What do you feel? Or how did this verse minister to you? And that's some of my favorite part of my day, is hearing what they say. And my son Solomon is a talker, and so he's always got something to say. And I think the Lord called me to do this and called me to do that. And that's been really
exciting. Is he okay with humans now?
He's okay with humans now. He's actually my extrovert. He wasn't as a toddler, but now he loves all the humans. Great.
And he's super smart. He's a super smart kid. I think it's cool because I think that, like, I've been thinking a lot lately about the just one thing we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about sometimes feeling in my mind this barrier with evangelism of, okay, this is exactly how it has to look. I have to be walking in Target or wherever I am, and I have to see someone, and then God's going to be like, speak to that person. And then I have to go to them, and they have to be like, no, I'm an atheist. And then I have to be like, Jesus loves you. And then they have to be like,
and your name is Lucille.
Yeah. And they have to be like, oh my gosh, Jesus loves me. And then I can come to church and be like, I met this atheist in Target, and I was like preaching to them, and they came to the Lord, and everybody's like, yay. And I think, like, that is like my...
That is so the Linda Hoffman story.
That's my mindset of evangelism. And sometimes I think it's like we forget, like, last week I was here and there was a lady here and she came into the teen center and we were like, she was asking like for just somewhere to shelter because it was raining. And so she was underneath like the awning in the front, and I was thinking, okay, well, I know the library is open, and so if she's still there when we're done, I'm going to give her a ride. And she was still there, so I called the director and was like, can I give her some chips? And he was like, yeah. So I gave her chips, I took her to the library, and I was telling her, like, hey, we have church on Saturday night and Sunday, and she was like, oh, and, like, wrote it down. Mm. And I haven't seen her, and I was thinking to myself, like, yesterday I was thinking, that is also a form of evangelism. And I don't necessarily know if the lady was in her right mind, because there were some things she was saying that was like a little bit off. But even then, like, there's not really a criteria for, okay, we have to evangelize to someone who is in their right mind, that is an atheist, that doesn't love the Lord.
Oh, yeah, like the demoniac in his right mind, like, all dressed up in a tuxedo.
Like, we don't, like, that lady, like, who knows if she came to Saturday Night? Who knows if she watched it on church? And God is so powerful. So I think, like, when you're talking about your kids, like, kids are also people that we evangelize to, because you raise them, and the way that you're raising your kids is you're sharing your faith, you know, you're sharing, like, this is the generational faith in our family. And there's one point in their life where they don't really have a whole lot of comprehension, and then they grow up and they start having comprehension and they start learning your testimony. And so I just think that, like, I think that sometimes, especially for, like, moms, like, stay-at-home moms with, like, you know, 2, 3, 4 kids, they kind of start to feel like, well, I'm not really, like, doing anything with anybody. I'm not, like, out there on the streets, like, healing people in the name of Jesus. Like, I'm not, like, at a teen center. I'm not doing Higher Ground Club. And they kind of feel like, I don't really get to participate in, like, being an evangelist, quote unquote. But I feel like you are an evangelist, Bree. Oh, and I really do feel like you are an evangelist. And I think that it's beautiful that you can do it not only with, like, people that you meet, because you meet new people all the time and you love meeting new people, but with your children. You know, you're being an evangelist to your children, and then they're going to grow up and they're going to remember the generation of Jesus on their family, and they're going to go and do that out in the world and do that with their children. And I think that, like, we always talk about how it starts in the home, and we're always asking, like, you know, how do we change our city? How do we change the world? I think we do that by raising up kids who love Jesus, that go into the world and then share Jesus and raise up kids who love Jesus, you know?
And I think you've got to condition yourself as a mom to really be satisfied with discipling your kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually what you want. That's what you're hungering and thirsting for, to disciple your kids and not scroll all day or distract yourself, to really love seeing the Lord grow these little people. And I've been convicted about that. I've had to throw away things that are a distraction to me and really be immersed in who they are. And when you do that, it's from Monday to Friday, they've grown so much. They've evolved so much. They've taken hold of things that you've said and started to apply them. Like, having two older kids and two toddlers, it's so cool to see. I will say something to Solomon and Finley about the Lord, and a couple days later, I'll hear them saying it to their younger siblings, Naomi and Chloe. And nothing brings me more joy than that. And they don't know I'm listening. They're doing it because it's in them and it's real.
Yeah. You know, I think the title of this episode is Ever Since Bree Stopped Watching Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
And there she is.
My life has changed since I got rid of Laguna Beach.
That's right. And I don't know about you and Andy, but when I get back home today, I'm going to tell Sylvia that we're moving in with the Burries. And they've got 12 acres.
Yeah, we're all going to the land.
You guys, that's actually my dream.
You
can
get your communal back.
I need a place to live.
Okay, and everybody that's listening, we just need the coordinates so they can show up.
Yeah, I always tell
you'll have to deal with me every day. Like, come on, guys, you want to worship together? You want to do coffee?
I think I would like that.
I don't think I know how to live with people without being, like, obnoxiously in their space. So.
No, I love that. Please be obnoxiously. Yeah, I always say we should all go to the land. You guys should build this giant farm table, and you should host dinners.
Sounds like
on
heaven
the
to
land.
Me.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what,
I like it.
That is my dream. That's what I hope happens.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think what just happened, Matt, is that Bree's got her dream. She's got her new podcast. It'll be Bree and Bree.
Yes.
Bree Squared.
It was
Bree Squared. And Bree Music Factory. But only you sing. Not me.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you sing, but definitely not me.
Oh,
singing.
Matt. I do not. I mean, I shouldn't. I do, but I shouldn't.
I love
That's me as well. I should not, but I do.
I'm really glad that you came today, and I'm glad that you were here, and I hope that...
That's been fun.
Yeah, I hope that the people that are listening, I hope that what they are taking from what you're saying is along the lines of really being content with what the Lord has given you, but also stepping out in faith when the Lord calls you to, regardless of your circumstances, and just honoring Him. You know, He's always going to be willing to, he always will equip you when he calls you to do something, no matter what season you're in. And mm-hmm. I think that that is the life of a Christian. So I love that.
Yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, bye-bye.